Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like, whatever, dude.
Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand.
You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
Look, what they do is they take sound bites. Russia, Russia, Russia. He's a paid associate of Putin. These people are crazy, okay? You know, that lasted 2.5 years, total exoneration. They went through millions of phone calls. I didn't have one call to Russia. The whole thing was a con job. And everything about them, look at Biden. He said he'll challenge me to golf. I'm a very good golfer. He's a terrible golfer. This guy can't hit a ball 30 yards. You saw those men downstairs, those policemen. They're screaming at me, hit a shot, hit
a
shot. And I hit a nice 7-iron right next to the pin. Biden wouldn't do that. He couldn't hit the ball 15 yards.
I mean, what is this, just plain weird?
Listen,
American families?
The whole thing is a con job, just plain weird. You know who's plain weird? She's plain weird. She's a weird person.
You know, he's right. That's why I start with the clip. This is Wiggins America. Trump is right about the way people spin things against him. He doesn't help himself sometimes. He makes it easy to spin things against him. Maybe that's kind of his superpower, is that he throws things out there that when you examine them, you go, well, that's not really what he said. But it's like catnip to the left and to leftist journalists to say, yeah, but I could spin this so easily. Why wouldn't I? And they just do. And now we're here where nobody trusts them. So welcome to Wiggins America. We have a great show. The guest that we have coming in next is going to talk about the Barron Trump Chronicles. If you haven't heard me talking about this, stick around because it's going to be so interesting. There's like claims of time travel. I mean, that's all what's on the docket. So we'll see how this goes next here on Wiggins America. But first, I do. One of the reasons I played that clip is because I just want to say this about the polling. I'm not going to go way in. If you want to look at last week's polling, last week's podcast or episode of Wiggins America, you can pick that up, hear a lot about that. But there's been a bunch of polling this week too, of course. Some of it has been decent polling. And I will say that when I see it, it does look like Kamala has picked up a couple of points on Trump nationally, and that puts the race at about even. The trouble is, some of the polls that are included in the average are way off. For instance, the Morning Consult poll, I've never seen anything so crazy. It actually favored Republicans by 1 point in the poll. And yet, Kamala Harris was winning Michigan by 12. That's not possible. And even if it were, even if there were some crazy trend that they were finding that nobody else was finding, then you'd see that trend in some other state than just Michigan, like Wisconsin or Pennsylvania. But they had Pennsylvania, Trump winning by 4. So these kind of polls are included in all of this narrative that's happening. So it's really hard to digest and parse out unless you do what I do and you look into almost every single poll's methodology and see what they're actually doing. Yes, she's gained a little. She hasn't gained as much as is being reported. Stick around. Troy Anderson's coming up next to tell us whether or not Trump is a time traveler. Yes.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, The podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to stay around for this one. If you're like me, you've heard about, but you don't know much about, this Ingersoll Lockwood, I'm getting his name right now, book series called The Barron Trump Chronicles. It's kind of made its way around the internet a little bit. The Barron Trump Chronicles are supposed to be all these similarities to this book written in the 1890s to the Trump family and everything happening in America right now. Well, I've got Troy Anderson on the phone. He is the author of The Trump Code, talking about that very subject. And I wanted to dive into this a little bit with Troy. Thanks for being here.
Oh, yeah, great to be on your show.
Troy, give us the details, like the eeriest stuff that Ingersoll Lockwood wrote in the 1890s that is almost like too eerie to be true, the parallels between then and now.
Yeah, so he's sort of this obscure lawyer and author in the late 1890s. Abraham Lincoln had actually named him consular general to Hanover, Germany, so he had a position in the government. And when Alice in Wonderland came out, it was real popular children's books. And so there's a number of books sort of similar to that that came out. So he wrote this three-part series called The Barron Trump Collection. And so a little boy named Barron Trump, whose drawing on the cover of the book looks like President Trump's son. And there's a striking resemblance. And the name's spelled a little bit different, two R's for Barron Trump, the president's son. And so this boy goes on these time-traveling adventures guided by Don, his uncle Don, the master of masters. He lives in Trump Castle on Fifth Avenue in New York City, where Trump Tower now stands, a century later.
Wow.
And so that's sort of the beginning.
Well, it's okay. So those are the general details. You have Barron Trump time traveling and going on adventures with his mentor, whose name is Don. And then the building, that's incredible. I have never heard that. So what about, is there any more details that you're like, okay, now this, here's where it gets really crazy.
Yeah. So the last book in the series is called The Last President. And
wow.
In this book, this populist president is elected, and when he is, the anarchists and socialists converge on Trump Castle, chanting "Death to the rich man," and then the armies are formed, and it's sort of, people are asking. There's been stories like in Newsweek and Politico and that kind of thing over the years, asking, was this guy, how did he, somehow foresee the future? Is this sort of prophetic? Maybe in the vein of like Aldous Huxley's Brave New World or George Orwell's 1984 and Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451. It seems like those things, we're sort of watching that happen today with the surveillance state and censorship and cancel culture and all that stuff. So the question is he prophetic? Are we now looking at the possibility we could see the last president? So that's the question people are asking.
Wow. So you dive into all this in The Trump Code, your book that connects all these things from this old Barron Trump Chronicles series to what's happening now. So I guess my question for you is, why do you think it's so accurate? I mean, what are your explanations as to how this could be that spot on?
So in the Trump Code, we sort of put together this 5,000 piece puzzle, not just looking at the works of Ingersoll Lockwood, but, all these different things, the prophecies from the Bible. I've actually written 7 books on biblical prophecy. I'm an investigative journalist, sort of looking at, are we really moving into these end time events the Bible talks about? And then, like I mentioned, you have the works of Orwell and Huxley and Bradbury, and then you have all these sort of modern day prophets. There's a guy named Ken Clement,
yeah,
who prophesied several years back, well before Trump was elected, that he would become president and actually have 2 terms. So, maybe now he'll actually have 2 terms. There's a guy named Lance Wallnau, wrote a book called, he's a political strategist, wrote a book called God's Chaos Candidate. And when he wrote this before the 2016 election, you know, Trump was down 10 points in the polls. Nobody really thought he could win. And then he won. And, you know, I remember Franklin Graham posted on his Facebook page, you know, nobody knew about the God factor, right? And so we sort of put this whole puzzle together. How does Trump sort of fit into this whole thing? Is, you know, is God using him for some purpose? And are we moving into the end times? And sort of put the whole puzzle together.
Oh, I think we might have lost you, Troy. You still there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So what I said is, the Trump code, which will come out on September 17th, already hit like number three hot new release. It looks, sort of puts this 5,000 piece puzzle together. How does Trump fit into sort of all these, you know, chaotic events we're seeing unfold today?
Troy, I got to tell you, that is fascinating stuff, because when I took the interview, I was very interested in the Trump code, but I had no idea you'd written all these books about biblical prophecy, too, because just last week, I delve into this stuff when I think it's relevant. You know, we talk politics a lot, and so when those two worlds cross, I find it very, very interesting. Dana Coverstone is one that I've watched, and Brandon Biggs, the recent prophecies from them, specifically Brandon Biggs. But I was just watching some Kim Clement stuff just this morning, surprisingly, and I'm going to have to look up your other books now. But specific to the Trump code, what do you want people, like, let's say Ingersoll Lockwood was a prophet. Let's say he was picking up on stuff that God was showing him about the future. I guess my big question as we conclude here is why? What was trying to be communicated to either them then or us now that God said this is necessary for people to know?
Yeah, so to sort of tell you succinctly, so my first book was The Babylon Code. It was an expose of globalism. A popular pastor, he loved the book so much, he delivered a box of The Babylon Code to the Trump team in early 2016. And then 2 months later, Trump announced Americanism, that globalism would be a credo at his platform for president. Then he won. Everybody was blown away. And our agent says, why don't we write a second book? We called it Trumpocalypse. In the last chapter, we called for a national day of repentance. A friend of ours is a great networker. He persuaded Rabbi Kahn to be the spokesman. They asked us to write the White House executive summary. And it actually happened. There was a big national day of repentance on the National Mall. 250,000 people showed up. 42 million people watched it. And then flash forward to April 8th, we had this great North American eclipse, and it went through all these towns called Nineveh. And I was inspired to call for this National Day of Repentance by an interview I did with Billy Graham back in 2013. And he said, when God sent the prophet Jonah to Nineveh to warn them of judgment, the king and the people repented. And he said the same thing could happen again, this time in America. So I just wrote a story for Chrisva. Is this our Nineveh moment? So that's the theme that runs through the Trump code. Is this our chance to turn back to God? Can we see a great turnaround? Can we see this revival grow? We have a bright future. I think God put the ball in our court.
Troy, what does it look like if we have national repentance? I mean, at what point do you say, there it is, there it's happened? You know, is there some sort of event that you go, we have moved into repentance as a nation?
I think we're seeing signs of it. Ever since that Jesus Revolution, great Greg Laurie's movie came out, you had the Asbury Revival, these revivals, these baptisms here in Orange County, down at Pirates Cove and across the country, Sean Foyt's outdoor events, Mario Murillo's tent revival. So we're seeing the sort of signs of this happening. And so only God knows when this will all sort of unfold. But I think there's many hopeful signs. And so I wrote all these books to encourage people to turn back to God and repent and, you know, turn from our ways, just like it says in Second Chronicles.
Troy, I got to tell you, I am absolutely fascinated by your stuff, especially the Trump code. Now tell people how they can get this.
Yeah, so it's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, pretty much anywhere books are sold, and comes out on September 17th.
So they can pre-order now.
Yeah.
All right, the Trump Code. Looking forward to it. Troy, thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much.
This is Wiggins America. We will be right back. Old Roy, just generally here, give me the state of the race. I mean, however you want to approach that.
The Olympic race or the... What race are we referring to?
Yeah, Michael Johnson, 1996. How is it going?
I am so confused right now with the state of the presidential race.
Okay.
There's so many things that don't make sense. And I think that's intentional. I don't think they want us to know exactly what's going on. on the Democrat side because it's hard to, I guess, attack or confront the opponent if you don't know who or where or what the opponent is. And even though it's kind of Kamala, but is it? I mean, is that really what we're running against? Is she actually a viable threat politically, or is there something behind who she's the face of right now?
These are good questions.
Is it? Do they even expect to win?
That's another good question. I think they do. I think there are large portions of the Democrat Party who think she has a shot. I've quoted Josh Hammer, also a weekend show here on 97.1, mm-hmm. several times. If you ever hear him and you're like, who's Josh Hammer? If you've ever tuned on the weekends and you hear a guy who sounds like Ben Shapiro, it's Josh Hammer.
Oh, okay.
So Josh Hammer is a fast-talking guy. He talks a lot of numbers, kind of like I do, a little behind the scenes since I do imaging and stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
When we asked him to do liners, he can get on the radio and just talk. When he did liners, he goes, this is Josh Hammer. We were like, it's a real simple couple lines we're doing here. It's just promo stuff.
Uh-huh.
He just could not do it. He gets on the radio, boom, 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 boom.
Wow.
So it's a very interesting. I actually like his show because he does talk numbers a lot. Yeah. One of the things he said was he thinks that now, and I'm a polling guy too, so I'm seeing the same thing.
Yeah.
Now he thinks there is a better chance at a narrow Democrat win, narrow Kamala win, than with Joe Biden. But there's also a bigger chance of a Trump blowout. Does that make sense to you?
It does, but it's frustrating because if it could be all or nothing, or it could be this or it could be that, it just maintains that level of anxiety of,
I know,
let's just get to November and get it done and move on from this horrible part of our history.
I think you're speaking to where a lot of people are, and it's not just politicos. I think you're talking about America right now.
Mm-hmm.
People who are tuned into this show, especially on a weekend, you guys are plugged in. You're probably feeling that on a higher level than an average person because you're paying attention,
mm-hmm.
and because you were locked in thinking, I mean, at least where I was, Trump's pretty much got this thing in the bag versus Biden. But with Harris, you don't know. All the things you just listed are weird, wild factors, weird, mm-hmm. wild factors. And they don't add up. You don't really know who your opponent is. And she's not a good campaigner. And I'm not saying that as like a hit on her. I'm saying that what this campaign, which is going to be real short, is going to look like, is going to be strange. Because she will do a lot of events to make it look like she's campaigning, but she will definitely not do what Trump just did a couple days ago and go in and sit with a bunch of journalists who absolutely hate her,
right,
and get peppered and then answer questions because she's terrible at it.
Yeah.
She can read a teleprompter and she can do it better than Joe Biden. And so all of a sudden everybody's like, oh my gosh, she's amazing. Yeah. Well, your bar was so low that having her walk around and not limp down.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Roy, just generally here, give me the state of the race. I mean, however you want to approach that.
The Olympic race or the... What race are we referring to?
Yeah, Michael Johnson, 1996. How is it going?
I am so confused right now with the state of the presidential race.
Okay.
It's... There's so many things that don't make sense that, and I think that's intentional. I don't think they want us to know exactly what's going on the Democrat side because it's hard to, I guess, attack or confront the opponent if you don't know who or where or what the opponent is. And even though it's kind of Kamala, but is it? I mean, is that really what we're running against? Is she actually a viable threat politically? Or is there something behind who she's the face of right now?
These are good questions.
Is it? Do they even expect to win?
That's another good question. I think they do. I think there are large portions of the Democrat Party who think she has a shot. I've quoted Josh Hammer, also a weekend show here on 97.1, mm-hmm. several times. If you ever hear him and you're like, who's Josh Hammer? If you've ever tuned on the weekends and you hear a guy who sounds like Ben Shapiro, it's Josh Hammer.
Oh, okay.
So Josh Hammer is a fast-talking guy. He talks a lot of numbers, kind of like I do, a little behind the scenes since I do imaging and stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
When we asked him to do liners, he can get on the radio and just talk. When he did liners, he goes, this is Josh Hammer. We were like, it's a real simple couple lines we're doing here. It's just promo stuff.
Uh-huh.
He just could not do it. He gets on the radio, boom, 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 boom.
Wow.
So it's a very interesting. I actually like his show because he does talk numbers a lot. Yeah. One of the things he said was he thinks that now, and I'm a polling guy too, so I'm seeing the same thing.
Yeah.
Now he thinks there is a better chance at a narrow Democrat win, narrow Kamala win, than with Joe Biden. But there's also a bigger chance of a Trump blowout. Does that make sense to you?
It does, but it's frustrating because if it could be all or nothing, or it could be this or it could be that, it just maintains that level of anxiety of,
I know,
let's just get to November and get it done and move on from this horrible part of our history.
I think you're speaking to where a lot of people are, and it's not just politicos. I think you're talking about America right now.
Mm-hmm.
People who are tuned into this show, especially on a weekend, you guys are plugged in. You're probably feeling that on a higher level than an average person because you're paying attention,
mm-hmm.
and because you were locked in thinking, I mean, at least where I was, Trump's pretty much got this thing in the bag versus Biden. But with Harris, you don't know. All the things you just listed are weird, wild factors. Weird, mm-hmm. wild factors. And they don't add up. You don't really know who your opponent is. And she's not a good campaigner. And I'm not saying that as like a hit on her. I'm saying that what this campaign, which is going to be real short, is going to look like, is going to be strange. Because she will do a lot of events to make it look like she's campaigning, but she will definitely not do what Trump just did a couple days ago and go in and sit with a bunch of journalists who absolutely hate her,
right,
and get peppered and then answer questions because she's terrible at it.
Yeah.
She can read a teleprompter and she can do it better than Joe Biden. And so all of a sudden everybody's like, oh my gosh, she's amazing. Yeah. Well, your bar was so low that having her walk around and not limp down stairs and things, yeah, you're like, she's doing amazing. So there is enthusiasm right now, I think, on the Democrat side because of that reason. Like, oh, we actually have a shot now. But I just don't know if you're really going to see that translate in November, but it scares me.
It scares me, too, because it's just going to continue the cycle. If it is close because of everything you're saying, that, well, she can walk and chew gum at the same time, so therefore, she's the best pick. It's disheartening in a way for me because I would rather there be a blowout, because then there's momentum. Then there's maybe people start to believe again. You're always going to have, I hope that we can get to where it's not half and half anymore. This divided, you know what I mean? I'm fine with the spectrum of political,
yeah,
ideology, but so divisive and so polarized right now that if it is close again, which every election in recent history has been way too close to allow for a momentum shift, and we're just ready, desperately ready right now, not just politically, spiritually, mentally, economically, emotionally. We need to restart with something behind it. And if Trump loses the popular vote but wins
the Electoral College,
we have no... It's okay, he won again, but half the country still hates him. And
you know what? I think you're speaking to something that I've been... It's like I do talk radio, so talk politics a lot. I do media all like 7 days a week, literally. Mm-hmm. I'm on the air. So I have to sort of frame my thoughts a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, so I originally worked at Joy FM. Well, I worked in TV before that, and then I worked at Joy FM. And then I worked with you in television. We tried to do national television. We had some success for about 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started here. And I realized in the time between working in radio, when I was with you, actually, that when you're doing TV, things move so much slower.
Yeah.
Because you're having to, you plan for 5 months for a shoot minimum.
Yeah.
And then you edit for another 5 months. And then maybe after a year, you got one show.
Right.
And that's if you're really moving fast. When radio, you just boom, 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 boom. News is moving all the time. So you got to frame your thoughts up, and you got to constantly be coming up with the way you're going to approach issues. And not to spin them, but just you have to get them out of your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's been going on in the back of my head that I have not been able to sort of push out there is not, I mean, it's deep in a sense, but it's not, is that the only reason I still have any optimism about this election is not because I trust the people running elections. It's not because I trust Democrats in deep blue cities to not cheat. It's not because I trust Republicans to do a great job. It's not because I trust anything. I do trust God. Mm-hmm. And that is the only reason I still think America has any hope. So I can't, it's hard for me to put that into speech a lot when we're on the radio so much.
Yeah.
Because in a sense, that's a conversation killer.
Yeah.
Like, Roy, what do you think? God's in control, right? Go.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you say? Yes, you know? So it's, we got to fill a lot of time here, and not just to fill time, but because there's a lot to talk about.
Right.
And part of the art of conversation is saying, what do you think about blank? And we're going to, I mean, we'll do that literally in the next segment. You're going to stick around. Hopefully, I didn't ask you. But we're going to talk about that Black Journalist Conference that Trump went to. Mm-hmm. And I want to play a couple things. I want to listen to the way these questions are being asked. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about that with you a little bit. So that's the kind of stuff we normally do. But when I say, yes, but God is in control, and that's really the only reason I have optimism, I mean, I don't really even know how to phrase that as a question to you.
Well, it's actually not as hard as you think, because it will depends on how you take that. If God can be ultimately in control, but that doesn't remove our accountability.
It also doesn't mean things go the way you think
exactly.
They should go.
Right. It doesn't mean we just sit back and watch God fix it. We have a role in that, and our connection to the higher power and our belief system and our core values all play a role. And so there's one line of thought that would be let go and let God, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's another thought that, well, because you believe in that,
faith without works is dead.
Yeah,
is what you're going
basically
for.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think it doesn't end it. If you truly believe that, yes, that can be true at the same time as we have responsibility to live to our
yeah. I think both of those things are true.
Mm-hmm.
Let go, let God, and then you have to act out your faith. You have to do something mm-hmm. for it to be alive.
Right.
And but I'm even talking about past the election, because yes, I'm not even considering there being a part of me that's not going to work hard to make sure that things go the way that I think that they should and the way that I hope they should. But after the election, well, then you kind of have to, assuming everything's on the up and up, you have to just sort of accept that this is the way things are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at that point that I really say, well, then my optimism is in God, whether it's Kamala Harris or Donald Trump or whoever else that it could be. My optimism doesn't come from the fact that it's a politician. But you do need that to kickstart something. It does feel like we're in a spot right now where America's going, there has to be something more than this.
Right.
Everybody's saying it. Everybody's always believed that, but now we're really at a tipping point where we're going, it's not Donald Trump. It's not Kamala Harris. Even Democrats, like everybody across the board is going, it ain't this.
Yeah.
We need something else, and that thing is Jesus. I mean, to me, it has never been clearer that the whole country is going, what do we need? And I'm going, I gotcha. We gotcha. And we need that catalyst, though.
Right.
Because it's not about politics, but you do need something to shift.
Exactly.
All right, we'll take a short break. Man, we've been talking about God a lot. You know, we had Troy Anderson on. That was really cool. I almost hesitate to talk about that with you because it'll veer us off in a completely different direction.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in now, get the podcast because he talked about all these weird, not prophecies, but the Barron Trump Chronicles from the 1890s and all the different parallels. So if you're just tuning in now, you should go listen to that because it's fascinating. We'll be right back.
It's not true. You have told four congresswomen of color who were American citizens to go back to where they came from. You have used words like animal and rabbit to describe black district attorneys. You've attacked black journalists, calling them a loser, saying the questions that they ask are, quote, stupid and racist. You've had dinner with a white supremacist at your Mar-a-Lago resort. So my question, sir, now that you are asking black supporters to vote for you, why should black voters trust you after you have used language like that?
Well, first of all, I don't think I've ever been asked a question so in such a horrible manner, first question. You don't even say, hello, how are you? Are you with ABC? Because I think they're a fake news network, a terrible network. And I think it's disgraceful that I came here in good spirit. I love the black population of this country. I've done so much for the black population of this country, including employment, including opportunity zones with Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, which is one of the greatest programs ever for black workers and black entrepreneurs. I've done so much, and, you know, and I say this, historically, black colleges and universities were out of money. They were stone cold broke. And I saved them and I gave them long-term financing and nobody else was doing it. I think it's a very rude introduction. I don't know exactly why you would do something like that. And let me go a step further. I was invited here and I was told my opponent, whether it was Biden or Kamala, I was told my opponent was going to be here. It turned out my opponent isn't here. You invited me under false pretense. And then you said, you can't do it with Zoom. Well, you know, where's Zoom? She's going to do it with Zoom, and she's not coming. And then you were half an hour late. Just so we understand, I have too much respect for you to be late. They couldn't get their equipment working or something
Mr.
was
President,
wrong.
Mr. President, I would love you to answer
it's a very nasty question.
Well,
I have answered the question. I have been the best president for the black population since Abraham Lincoln.
Better than President Johnson, who signed the Voting Rights Act.
For you to start off a question and answer period, especially when you're 35 minutes late because you couldn't get your equipment to work in such a hostile manner, I think it's a disgrace.
Okay, I played that ridiculous clip because that is Trump. That is the first question Trump got asked at the National Association of Black Journalists this week. Kudos to that guy for sitting down with those people. He knows he's walking into hostile territory, but when you hear somebody with that disdain, I would not want to sit down with somebody who hated me that badly,
right?
Because you know you're just walking into a trap, but he does it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing, and some of the quotes that have come out, I thought they were going to be a big deal on, I guess it would have been Wednesday night. Well, Thursday morning, I come into work like, all right, let's get into some headlines. I went to Yahoo's homepage. It wasn't even one of the top stories about questioning Kamala's heritage.
Right.
Have you even heard about this?
Yeah.
You heard? Okay.
Yeah.
You pay attention. But if you're not really plugged in, I don't know that this really cracked through. It's amazing that old Teflon Don just keeps saying this stuff, and you're like, Well, it gets attention from people who want to be offended or want to defend him or whatever. But outside of that, I think it's just like, that's Don. That's old Don just doing his thing.
Well, and the ironic thing is everything leading up to that this week, the places where I look for headlines and aggregates and things like that, all of this stuff with Kamala's, you know, white dudes for Kamala and white women for Kamala, they've made it
a race thing.
And so to that in a weird way, that sort of softened Trump's comment because everybody's just been hit over the head with the odd racist tone that they've taken. And by racist, I mean focusing on a race.
On the
Harris campaign. It's just weird that it's all.
What's amazing to me is that it is a central talking point of their campaign, that she is going to make history if she's elected. She's incredible. But it's like, okay, that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. If the next female president or the first female president is Nikki Haley or Tulsi Gabbard, I'll think, well, that's cool. I mean, that's a moment in history. You thought that about Barack Obama. Regardless of what you thought of him, you thought, well, that's cool. Like, you have a black president for the first time ever. Mm-hmm. That's history. And so I will think that for a moment and then instantly transition to how does this person affect my life?
Yeah.
Because all of that is a cultural touchstone, but you can't just campaign on that. I think they're messing up by campaigning just on that. They're not talking about her policies, or at least they can't figure out what to talk about with her policies because it's all over the place. Mm-hmm. She's on record. Mark Thiessen this week was on Kilmeade talking about this, how she has so much audio and video. It's not just papers.
Yeah.
Of her saying crazy radical things about allowing people to, like, criminal terrorists to vote and just nuts stuff that you can't run from it, but they're trying to run from it, but they don't really know what they're running to. They can't figure out what, there's no real policy message from her.
No, there's not. And I think it's a mistake because there was a couple of day window where there was a lot of talk about she's the most radical leftist in the Senate. Her votes were the most radical. But the reality is, from my perspective, and I think from a lot of people's perspective, is she has no ideology.
No.
She will say and do whatever she needs to say, and, well, like most politicians.
Yes.
But I think she is even more obviously, in my mind, just saying whatever is expedient in that moment.
And not saying it real well. You can tell that what she does, unfortunately, is that she stalls for time in the middle of her answers, which is why she doesn't do interviews.
Right. And you can tell that it's not a core fundamental.
No.
She's just saying it because that was what somebody told her to say. And
yeah, she's going back. You can tell that she's like, oh, I know this answer. Let me find it real quick.
Yeah.
You can see her doing it in her head, which, you know, not everybody's built for that kind of pressure, and that's okay. But that also means you're not going to be the president, or you shouldn't be. Mm. You shouldn't be the vice president either. You probably shouldn't be a senator. The big question I wanted to roll out to you, and that's why I opened with that clip, is that Trump is trying out new nicknames for Kamala Harris, and I pulled this story. Laughing Kamala, Crazy Kamala, he called Dumb as a Rock, DEI Hire. Actually, I don't know he said that. That's just an internet thing. People are like, oh, it's going to backfire. You can't do that. I guess my big question, based on not only the conference from this week that he attended, and it was just absolutely—I almost call that harassment on that stage. It was incredible, but he can take it. ineloquently answering questions, but you know, it's Donald Trump. Like, he's not a politician. That's why people like him. Do you think that it's better at this point that the cameras, the spotlights, the attention is on Donald Trump or on Kamala Harris? Because to me, it feels as if when the attention is on Kamala Harris right now, it's actually hurting Donald Trump a little bit because the coverage is just so beautiful. It's all glowing coverage.
Yeah, the hope would be that she trips over herself enough. I mean, eventually they had to stop covering Biden.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's where we're at with Trump too, is that they like I said with this thing, you know, it wasn't even a headline the next day. On Wednesday night, maybe for a minute, but it's pretty much gone away. You're going to hear it in political circles for a long time. They're going to talk about this stuff and be like, oh, he questions people's race and he's super offensive. And then you hear the tone of the person asking the question. You're like, who's offensive here?
Right.
Well, okay. Who's hateful? But I guess overall, between now and November 5th, do you think this, I mean, it's a very general question, but do you think the spotlight is better on Donald Trump or better on Kamala Harris for Republicans?
I think it's better if it's on Kamala.
Okay.
Because, I mean, Trump's not going to do or say anything to surprise anybody or change anybody's mind at this point. So all they're going to do by putting the spotlight on him is criticize and harp on the same old things. If he'd have come up with a nickname for Kamala the first time he ran, it would have been he kind of blows through that stuff. He doesn't.
It's all
waste
just baked
his time
in now.
Yeah, he had done it to the entire field of Republican presidential candidates the first time he ran. And everybody was like, at first, we're like, oh, politicians don't call each other names. But it's so much a part of what he's done almost his entire public life that it doesn't have the same impact that it might have had. So to answer your question, I say focus on Kamala.
See, I think the opposite. And I think your answer makes sense. And I do believe that most people would say that. Hmm. But I believe that the coverage is going to be so glowing of her and they're not going to ever really press her that they're going to make her into sort of a caricature of just a nice person and a happy warrior for the United States. And they don't really want you to think too much about it. They're just going to make it nice. And so the coverage of her, I think it's actually going to be better if they're not doing that and they cover Trump more. And here's the thing. He's going to demand they pay attention to him because he's Donald Trump. So I don't know that that's going to be an issue. I just hope it doesn't get like too crazy. But again, as we started, I don't know that it's really going to matter much. Hey, if you missed the interview with Troy Anderson, I was just here talking with Roy off air about it. He talks about the Barron Trump Chronicles, which were written in the 1890s. And again, if you missed it, get the podcast because it is fascinating stuff. It's a story of Barron Trump who time travels with his mentor who's named Don, and they live in Manhattan in Trump Castle. And he's like, look, are they actually time travelers? So go get that interview. It's actually really fascinating. I took it kind of as a joke, but then he hooked me and I'm like, wow, it's actually pretty interesting. The last book of the Trump Chronicles, or the Barron Trump Chronicles, is called The Last President. It was written in the 1890s, you guys. Go get that. Wiggins America, get the podcast.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Because it's fascinating. We'll be right back.
It's not true. You have told four congresswomen of color who were American citizens to go back to where they came from. You have used words like animal and rabbit to describe black district attorneys. You've attacked black journalists, calling them a loser, saying the questions that they ask are, quote, stupid and racist. You've had dinner with a white supremacist at your Mar-a-Lago resort. So my question, sir, now that you are asking black supporters to vote for you, why should black voters trust you after you have used language like that?
Well, first of all, I don't think I've ever been asked a question so in such a horrible manner, first question. You don't even say, hello, how are you? Are you with ABC? Because I think they're a fake news network, a terrible network. And I think it's disgraceful that I came here in good spirit. I love the black population of this country. I've done so much for the black population of this country. including employment, including opportunity zones with Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, which is one of the greatest programs ever for black workers and black entrepreneurs. I've done so much, and, you know, and I say this, historically black colleges and universities were out of money, they were stone cold broke, and I saved them, and I gave them long-term financing, and nobody else was doing it. I think it's a very rude introduction. I don't know exactly why you would do something like that. And let me go a step further. I was invited here, and I was told my opponent, whether it was Biden or Kamala, I was told my opponent was going to be here. It turned out my opponent isn't here. You invited me under false pretense. And then you said, you can't do it with Zoom. Well, you know, where's Zoom? She's going to do it with Zoom, and she's not coming. And then you were half an hour late. Just so we understand, I have too much respect for you to be late. They couldn't get their equipment working or something
Mr.
was
President,
wrong.
Mr. President, I would love I think you it's can a answer very the question nasty on your question. Rhetoric well, and why
I,
you believe
I have
that
answered
black
the question.
Trust you with another
I have
years.
Been the best president for the black population since Abraham Lincoln.
Better
That's
than,
my answer.
Better than President Johnson, who signed the Voting Rights
and
Act.
For you to start off a question and answer period, especially when you're 35 minutes late because you couldn't get your equipment to work, in such a hostile manner, I think it's a disgrace.
Okay, I played that ridiculous clip because that is Trump. That is the first question Trump got asked at the National Association of Black Journalists this week. Kudos to that guy for sitting down with those people. He knows he's walking into hostile territory. But when you hear somebody with that disdain, I would not want to sit down with somebody who hated me that badly.
Right.
Because you know you're just walking into a trap, but he does it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. And some of the quotes that have come out, I thought they were going to be a big deal on, I guess it would have been Wednesday night. Well, Thursday morning, I come into work like, all right, let's get into some headlines. I went to Yahoo's homepage. It wasn't even one of the top stories about questioning Kamala's heritage.
Right.
Have you even heard about this?
Yeah.
You heard? Okay.
Yeah.
You pay attention. But if you're not really plugged in, I don't know that this really cracked through. It's amazing that old Teflon Don just keeps saying this stuff, and you're like, well, it gets attention from people who want to be offended or want to defend him or whatever. But outside of that, I think it's just like, yeah, that's Don. That's old Don just doing his thing.
Well, and the ironic thing is, everything leading up to that this week, the places where I look for headlines and aggregates and things like that, all of this stuff with Kamala's, you know, white dudes for Kamala and white women for Kamala, they've made it
a race thing.
And so to that in a weird way, that sort of softened Trump's comment because everybody's just been hit over the head with the odd racist tone that they've taken, and by racist I mean focusing on a race. On the Harris campaign. It's just weird that it's all.
What's amazing to me is that it is a central talking point of their campaign, that she is going to make history if she's elected. She's incredible. But it's like, okay, that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. If the next female president or the first female president is Nikki Haley or Tulsi Gabbard, I'll think, well, that's cool. I mean, that's a moment in history. You thought that about Barack Obama. Regardless of what you thought of him, you thought, well, that's cool. Like, you have a black president for the first time ever. Mm-hmm. That's history. And so I will think that for a moment and then instantly transition to how does this person affect my life?
Yeah.
Because all of that is a cultural touchstone, but you can't just campaign on that. I think they're messing up by campaigning just on that. They're not talking about her policies, or at least they can't figure out what to talk about with their policies because it's all over the place. Mm-hmm. She's on record. Mark Thiessen this week was on Kill Me talking about this, how she has so much audio and video. It's not just papers.
Yeah.
Of her saying crazy radical things about allowing people to, like, criminal terrorists to vote and just nuts stuff that you can't run from it, but they're trying to run from it, but they don't really know what they're running to. They can't figure out what, there's no real policy message from her.
No, there's not. And I think it's a mistake to, because there was a couple of day window where there was a lot of talk about she's the most radical leftist in the Senate. Her votes were the most radical. But the reality is, from my perspective, and I think from a lot of people's perspective, is she has no ideology.
No.
She will say and do whatever she needs to say, and, well, like most politicians.
Yes.
But I think she is even more obviously, in my mind, just saying whatever is expedient in that moment.
And not saying it real well. You can tell that what she does, unfortunately, is that she stalls for time in the middle of her answers, and which is why she doesn't do interviews.
Right. And you can tell that it's not a core fundamental.
No.
She's just saying it because that was what somebody told her to say. And
yeah, she's going back. You can tell that she's like, oh, I know this answer. Let me find it real quick.
Yeah.
You can see her doing it in her head, which, you know, not everybody's built for that kind of pressure, and that's okay. But that also means you're not going to be the president, or you shouldn't be. Mm. You shouldn't be the vice president either. You probably shouldn't be a senator. The big question I wanted to roll out to you, and that's why I opened with that clip, is that Trump is trying out new nicknames for Kamala Harris, and I pulled this story. Laughing Kamala, Crazy Kamala, he called Dumb as a Rock, DEI Hire. Actually, I don't know he said that. That's just an internet thing. People are like, oh, it's going to backfire. You can't do that. I guess my big question, based on not only the conference from this week that he attended, and it was just absolutely, I almost call that harassment on that stage. It was incredible, but he can take it. ineloquently answering questions, but, you know, it's Donald Trump. Like, he's not a politician. That's why people like him. Do you think that it's better at this point that the cameras, the spotlights, the attention is on Donald Trump or on Kamala Harris? Because to me, it feels as if when the attention is on Kamala Harris right now, it's actually hurting Donald Trump a little bit because the coverage is just so beautiful. It's all glowing coverage.
Yeah. The hope would be that she trips over herself enough. I mean, eventually they had to stop covering Biden.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's where we're at with Trump, too, is that they, like I said with this thing, you know, it wasn't even a headline the next day. On Wednesday night, maybe for a minute, but it's pretty much gone away. You're going to hear it in political circles for a long time. They're going to talk about this stuff and be like, oh, he questions people's race and he's super offensive. And then you hear the tone of the person asking the question, you're like, Who's offensive here?
Right.
Okay. Who's hateful? But I guess overall, between now and November 5th, do you think this, I mean, it's a very general question, but do you think the spotlight is better on Donald Trump or better on Kamala Harris for Republicans?
I think it's better if it's on Kamala.
Okay.
Because, I mean, Trump's not going to do or say anything to surprise anybody or change anybody's mind at this point. So all they're going to do by putting the spotlight on him is criticize and harp on the same old things. If he'd have come up with a nickname for Kamala the first time he ran, it would have been he kind of blows through that stuff. He doesn't
waste his time now.
Yeah, he had done it to the entire field of Republican presidential candidates the first time he ran, and everybody was like, at first were like, oh, politicians don't call each other names, but it's so much a part of what he's done almost his entire public life that it doesn't have the same impact that it might have had. So to answer your question, I say focus on Kamala.
See, I think the opposite, and I think your answer makes sense, and I do believe that most people would say that. But I believe that the coverage is going to be so glowing of her, and they're not going to ever really press her, that they're going to make her into sort of a caricature of a just a nice person and a happy warrior for the United States. And they don't really want you to think too much about it. They're just going to make it nice. And so the coverage of her, I think it's actually going to be better if they're not doing that. And they covered Trump more. And here's the thing. He's going to demand they pay attention to him
right.
because he's Donald Trump. So I don't know that that's going to be an issue. I just hope it doesn't get like too crazy. But again, as we started, I don't know that it's really going to matter much. Hey, if you missed the interview with Troy Anderson, I was just here talking with Roy off air about it. He talks about the Barron Trump Chronicles, which were written in the 1890s. And again, if you missed it, get the podcast because it is fascinating stuff. It's a story of Barron Trump who time travels with his mentor who's named Don, and they live in Manhattan in Trump Castle. And he's like, look, are they actually time travelers? So go get that interview. It's actually really fascinating. I took it kind of as a joke, but then he hooked me, and I'm like, wow, it's actually pretty interesting. The book, the last book of the Trump Chronicles, or the Barron Trump Chronicles, is called The Last President. It was written in the 1890s, you guys. Go get that. Wiggins America, get the podcast.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.